three. Wait, how's it going? 5, 4, 2. All right, everybody. Welcome back to another amazing and exciting episode of the best darn show on the internet, the Oversharing Show. We have a guest today we're very excited about, but before we get into that, we're going to stick to our standard Oversharing traditions, and we're going to read a quote, but we are going to switch it up a little bit because today, Sharon is going to read the quote, as long as I could pull it up. And here it is. Sharon?
This is a good one.
Thank you.
By Hermann Hesse. My story isn't pleasant. It's not sweet and harmonious like the invented stories. It tastes of folly and bewilderment, of madness and dream, like the life of all people who no longer want to lie to themselves. Indeed.
Amazing. And I think it's great because he died, well, not great, but he died in 1962. If he could have just lived for like 14 more years, he could have witnessed my birth, you know. It would have been great for him. All right, so everybody, we also pull a card every show after our quote. So I'm going to pull a card from the Thoth deck, which is a deck that was created by Aleister Crowley. And I know a lot of people have some like different opinions on Aleister Crowley, but we here at the Oversharing Show have the view, well, I know I probably speak for Sharon when I say this, but no matter what your view is on somebody, especially somebody like Aleister Crowley, you know, we're never going to know, right? Because we weren't there and we all know about history and how it's twisted and inverted.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, you know, even if he was this evil person who was like a devil worshiper, do you think that it's possible that the creator of this whole wonderful realm and experience we're having, call him God if you'd like, do you think it's possible that if Aleister Crowley thought of himself as this trickster, that maybe God played a trick on him? It was like, oh, if you want to be a devil worshiper and create this tarot deck, I'm going to make it a beautiful, useful tool for people in the future, despite all your efforts. So that's kind of how we view the tarot. We just look at it as a tool, right? Not the all end all be all. We don't even actually ascribe any kind of power to it. But I think we can get into that a little later.
We use it as a synchronicity.
Yeah, exactly. We have the Princess of Cups here.
Ooh. Oh, that describes me pretty nicely.
Yeah. Got to get your bow on.
Yeah, really.
But yeah, I like this card. It's got this princess here, right? And she has this dress that looks like a shell. So there's a lot of, and then you see even a turtle in a shell, a lot of shell and a fish, a lot of water references here. And princesses are like a page in a normal deck of cards. So it represents whatever that element is. So for cups, it's water, and it would represent maybe an apprenticeship in that, or a beginning, or some kind of beginning of mastery in that, and also like a youthfulness. So Sharon, do you have anything you'd want to say about the card? Or
no, sorry, I'm still distracted by my not being ready and having technical difficulties before the stream.
How dare you? I have it's all right. So I actually have this book. It's like the new edition. I could look up the card and
check it out.
See what it says about it.
It's really a good book.
Yes, and
that's not the relationships one, right? That's just the normal one.
Yeah, no, this is just the normal one. In the meantime, I will introduce our guest really quickly because I don't want to keep him waiting too long, but. Mm-hmm. His name is Zach, and Sharon and I are both friends with him. I have met him and hung out with him in real life. Really great dude. And, you know, we talk a lot in the Oversharing Show about spiritual journeys and stuff like that. And so he's been a fan of our show, and he wanted to come and share his story because, I mean, everybody's story is pretty unique. But I think that, you know, in light of what we've been talking about with the Tao and just everything we talk about on the show, I think it's a perfect fit. So I was really excited to hear that he was going to come on the show.
Cool. So thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Brandon, you're a cool dude too. We've hung out at my house, been to, you know, a few gatherings and stuff. So yeah. And Brandon made this beautiful necklace for me too. One of the first times I hung out with him. So I thought I'd wear that.
And you helped him install. Did you help him install the thing on his Tahoe so that he could do the road trip where, where Brandon met me in person?
Yeah. Yep. Wow.
Yeah. The rooftop tent thing. That was really cool. Yeah. We did that right in my driveway out here. That was fun.
In the freezing cold. It was fun though. I had a great time. We had some really good food. I think it was something from a deer that you shot. It was like a stew or something, or maybe a deer heart or something, but it was really, really good.
Wow.
Yeah that sounds about right.
That's amazing. There's
usually some sort of deer stew going at our house at one point or another.
We just went out in the backyard and shot a deer and gutted it and ate it raw. Everybody, we're men.
Nice.
Sounds like a good time.
No, that's good. All right. So in the book, really quick, we'll go to this. It says, "The Princess of Cups is represented as a dancing figure. She is free, not imprisoned by emotions. For a swan rising above her head shows the independence and freedom she has gained. She has cast off the bonds of possessiveness and manipulation. Freed from jealousy, she is surrounded by grace, kindness, and clarity." I like that because I feel like that's kind of what we're going to be talking about.
I totally thought so.
Yeah, there's definitely some synchro in there for sure.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, and I'll give a, I guess I'll talk quickly about the tarot kind of I talked about. Again, we view it really as a tool because we use it through synchronicity. We don't ascribe power to it. Now, that's not to say that the tarot doesn't have any power or couldn't have power over somebody. It's just like any tool, you know, like a gun, for example, right? You can use that gun. Obviously, everybody knows examples, you know, it can protect yourself or you can rob a bank or whatever. So it's a tool. But the thing is also you could get obsessed with the tarot or a gun or any tool and you could put it on a pedestal and think that the only thing that's ever going to help you is the tarot. And just like with any information that you would consider like occulted or hidden or like this hermetic stuff, it can be dangerous. And I was just talking about this yesterday. Because we're restarting the Tarot Bowl podcast. Very excited. So Ashley and I recorded an episode, but I was talking about this kind of stuff where if you come across information or even truth, no matter what it is, you know, even if it's like the truth about the Kennedy assassination or like questioning it, if you come across some truth, it could be dangerous in a way if you haven't done some kind of work to really get to know yourself. Because it could send you on several, you know, like rabbit holes and just spiraling in different directions. And
I think it's attachment to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Attachment for sure. I think you have to know when to let things go and know when to kind of make your own decisions. But we use it really as a guide just through symbolism, because I feel like symbolism is a great way to communicate throughout the ages. So that's kind of our view on it. Like I said, we don't really ascribe any power to it, but there's always a warning, because if somebody's not ready, you know, and you just start following the tarot, you can be led by fear or any kind of any emotion or whatever into different actions that maybe you wouldn't otherwise take.
Right.
So that's my little caveat on the tarot.
Yeah, that makes sense. I could see people kind of building their whole personality around it. So where they, you know, just ascribe to whatever that says, they're going to have to try to manipulate their lives to fit what the cards are saying versus, like you said, using it like a tool. So that makes sense.
And one other thing too is not all tarot readers have the best intentions in mind for their people that they read for or their clients, because it might not even be a conscious thing, right? But if you have to go to somebody else for the answers all the time, they could kind of string you along and keep you going, especially if they have some of this occult or whatever information, you know, even if it's just about human behavior, if they have more than you do, because we all know in this society we're really not taught a lot about human behavior for some reason,
right?
But they could keep you dependent on them, and not that it's a bad thing to go get a reading or whatever, but you always have to look out for that as well.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a chiropractor.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, you could take that point to the next step. Like if they're making any kind of money off you or any kind of personal gain from that, there's going to be that incentive to manipulate you in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Just like anything, even, you know, like you said, Sharon, like a chiropractor or a doctor or a psychiatrist or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's really good ones out there that are helping people, but then there's other ones out
that
there
don't want to see you back, and not in a bad way.
Right.
Yeah. There's some that just want you to go, just be healed and be gone, you know, and then yeah. other people, it's like they're making. Yeah. So 100%. Yeah.
The first time I went to a chiropractor, he was like automatically trying to get me to come in 3 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, ooh, that was like a red flag right off the bat. But like you said, it does, you know, some of the things they do help, but I always make the point, like anyone kind of stretching you out and rubbing on your back and shoulders, you're going to feel good when you leave regardless.
Right. So. Right.
Yeah. And it's funny that you mentioned that because my woman, Elizabeth, has a chiropractor she sees on occasion. And this guy, I've even had a discussion with him. He's like really, really cool guy, really nice. And the best thing about him is you basically pay what you can afford.
Oh, just, that's cool.
Just the thing to put an envelope of money in there. And, you know, it doesn't seem like it's high pressure or anything like that. And everybody in there, when I was there, the way he does it, he has one big room with all the tables laid out and people just come in and he has his dog there and everything. And he just talks to everybody. It's like a really high vibration. Yeah.
That's really nice.
Adjustment. Yeah.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
That is really nice. That's really cool.
Well, Sharon, what should we talk about?
Well, today we have our guest on to talk about his spiritual journey. And he, well, as Brandon entitled it, from fundamentalist to free thinker.
That was pretty good. I like that.
I thought that was funny. Yeah. It's almost kind of like clickbaity, but
yeah, sometimes,
but that wasn't really on purpose.
I didn't even mean, yeah, it's like accidental. It's funny. I'm accidentally funny. A lot of times I'll say things in a different order or mix it up, but it actually makes sense and is funny. Or sometimes I'll say something not meaning it and it's hilarious, but yeah. Or sometimes I title things like that unconsciously. So
we have him to talk about how his life started out and kind of where he's at now and things along the way. We'll let him take the lead and we'll probably chime in a little here and there as well.
Yeah. Any questions you have in the middle, feel free to interrupt me because I'll kind of ramble. I was kind of thinking about how I want to lay the story out and make sure I'm hitting all the finer points and all that. So I'll start with my childhood. So my parents moved us up to the Adirondacks to this town that it's a town that's basically run by a Christian. I call it a pseudo cult. It's not really a cult, but it has cult aspects.
Yeah.
And
I get that.
It's non-denominational Christian, but it's very fundamentalist, very legalistic.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, an example would be, some movies could be bad for you, so you're not allowed to watch any movies.
Yes.
Some music could be bad for you, so no music unless it's Christian music.
Yes.
Right. So it's like an all or nothing kind of thing. Like you were, and most of the parents I knew, most of the kids I grew up with, were their parents worked there. Their parents were involved in it. It has a Bible college. It's got a kids camp. It's got a youth camp. And then it's got like an adult retreat center. So it's like 4 different campuses. So if you can imagine the amount of staff that takes to operate, most of the people that lived in the town worked there. And then all those people went to the same church. You know, I even went to their Christian school as a kid. So when I say fundamentalist, it was very much the type of church where, and you know, anything of the world is bad. We're not going to tell you why it's bad. It's just bad. And if you even think about any of those things, you're bad and God doesn't like you. You know, obviously they didn't say these things directly.
Right.
At you,
right. It's like implied.
It's implied. Right. So yeah.
I do have a quick question for you.
Yeah.
Did they have a name for themselves or how did, like, was there any like figure that was important to them or anything like that?
Yeah, it's called Word of Life, and I'm sure people have heard of it. It's okay. Upstate New York. They're pretty big. I mean, it's a pretty big organization.
All right. I've never heard of that one, but okay.
So basically growing up, I thought that any kind of, you know, like I'm trying to think of a good way to put this. So I'll say it like this. Everyone in the church had this like Sunday face that they would put on, and then they would have their hidden life behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So they were, you know, everyone had the perfect family. The 2.5 kids, you know, the suit and tie, and everyone is always smiling and everyone's always happy, and nobody ever drank, nobody ever smoked, nobody ever had sex outside of marriage. Like, any of these taboo Christian things were so like taboo, and you don't speak about them. The problem was they would never tell you why these things were bad. They just said they're bad and don't do them, right? Mm-hmm. So you grew up like with all these like earth, like worldly things being really demonized. And like I said, there's this like kind of mask that they would wear. And as I got a little older, so first of all, they would use the classic fear techniques to get you to fear internal damnation. Like, if you do any of these bad things, you're going to, you know, they were telling you at like 5-6 years old that you're going to burn in a lake of fire if you sin, and you know, they really, really laid on the guilt.
Horrid.
So that was a big part of their church. And what happened as I got older, I became a young teenager, and I started to realize that a lot of these like perfect Christians that I saw growing up, and these examples I had of these great Christian men, were doing all these nefarious things behind the scenes. Like, there was a guy that was like one of the top guys on the campus. He got caught stealing people's credit cards and using it to pay for porno sites. And he was like one of the top leaders in the church, right?
Holy smokes.
And then I would find out that like this one guy secretly smokes cigarettes behind the church and nobody knows, or, you know, this guy is a drunk and nobody knows, but he pretends he's not. So all this stuff started unraveling as a teenager, where all these people I had put on a pedestal as these like great Christian men or great Christian women that like had no flaws, you know, like they were perfect. They'd never sinned. There were these perfect examples. I realized that all these people had all these struggles behind the scenes, right? But you were never allowed to talk about them. You kept them secret, and they were your secrets, you know? So naturally, when I got to college, the floodgates kind of opened. Like, I didn't have my parents there. I wasn't in this town anymore. So I was like, screw it. I'm doing all the stuff I was told I was never supposed to do. So, you know, hooking up with a lot of women, drinking, doing drugs, like basically all the stuff that I was told was horrible things. And I'm not saying they're good or bad. That's not the point here. The point was that they never really explained why these things were bad. And that was, I think, my biggest problem was they didn't like sit you down and say, hey, you shouldn't have sex before marriage because of X, Y, and Z. They're just like, don't do it. Don't question it. Don't ask about it. Just don't do it. So mm-hmm. growing up, if I ever had like a sexual thought as a kid, I would think like I was sinning just for having the thought. Like, why am I having these thoughts? Like, this is horrible. Why is God giving me these thoughts? So, you know, natural things that boys go through as they're growing up, I was told were like horrible and you need to beat them out of yourselves. No pun intended. but you get the idea. So basically that fundamental upbringing led me to reject God completely. I would say by the time I turned 18, went to college, I didn't want anything to do with the church or God for at least the next, I would say like 7 years, until I was like 24, 25. And that was around the time I met my wife and we started dating, and she had kind of gone through a similar thing. She was raised Catholic, which didn't really push the guilt stuff as much. But she also kind of went through the whole thing where she got to college and drank and, you know, did all the crazy things we do in college. And then we both decided, let's get back to our Christian roots. We got married and we're going to find a church in our local town and we're going to start going. So what we settled on, what the church that I ended up going to was like a one of those charismatic churches. Do you guys know about those?
Yes.
It's the types where like people are like waving their hands in the air and like screaming, falling on the floor and wiggling over. Around and yeah. like, and it was appealing to me because I grew up in a very like clean cut church where everyone stood very silently with their ties on. And it was very like,
yeah,
very Orthodox. And
you
then
just wanted to see the opposite. Why
right,
not?
So this was the opposite. They still preached Jesus. Of course, they still preached, you know, the gospel and all that, but the church, it was like, it was exciting. It was fun. And my wife and I even got into like ministry there. Like, we did the youth group, like we were youth pastors there for a while. My wife was involved in the music, you know, she played piano and sang and all that stuff. And we got like really into it. And like, we really loved, we felt like there was like actual passion for God in there, right? Like, you could feel it. But deep down, and this is where I get to like the rest of my journey. Deep down, I've always had these like contradictions with the whole story that never fit for me. So I always break it down. Like, let's say there's 30 points and 28 of those points work, but two don't. And the two that don't would kind of destroy the other 28 for me. Like, you know, if this, I don't really want to get into like a theology debate over like little ins and outs, but essentially I just never found that. Like, what's that?
I said, we wouldn't be debating.
Yeah, no, I didn't think this was the right place for that. And I don't really want to get into it either because it turns into a whole thing. But, oh, sorry, my alarm's going off. There we go. So at around, I think I was like 32 or so, I remember I was asking the pastor some of these questions that I never really got satisfying answers for. And they would basically tell me any kind of question you had about the Bible is from the devil. Just ignore it. You know, don't read outside texts. Don't, you know, don't question it. Cause if you question it, that's like basically the devil trying to get you away from Christianity. And that's what I was told. I was like, don't even question it. Don't bring up these contradictions that you find. Don't bring up these questions you have. Just go along, get along, dance to the music, and leave it be. So I basically decided that my family, I led the march against it, I guess, that we were going to stop going to church for a while. I was like, we're going to take a break. So we stopped going to this church. I think I was like 32 or so. And I started to basically go around and look at other extra canonical or non-canonical texts. So I got like the Gospel of Thomas, I got the Book of Enoch, and I started digging into these other texts. And I was like, whoa, like I was blown away. I was like, these answer a lot of the questions I had from the original canon. Like, I guess, so I was Protestant, so we used the, I guess there's 66 books in the Protestant version. There's 73 in the Catholic, and there's 88 books in the Ethiopian. But besides that, I started looking at some of these other texts, and I was finding these things that really made a lot of stuff fit. And then that kind of led me down this whole journey of like, what do I believe? So at one point, I want to say I was 33, no numerology, but maybe it was actually, now that I look back at it, I was exactly 33. And I remember sitting down and I was praying to God. And I was like, I don't know what to believe anymore. Like, I've heard this story, I've heard that story. All these other sects have all these different parts of the Bible that they focus on. And some of them contradict, some of them don't. And I just don't know what to believe anymore. So I remember praying, and what I was compelled to do was to forget everything I had ever learned about God, throw it all out, like start fresh.
Yep.
So that's what I did. I basically started with a complete fresh slate. I looked inside myself and I was like, what do I believe in my heart and my soul? And what do I believe only because other people have told me to believe that? And when I did that, the only thing I could come up with was that I believe there's a creator. I had one sentence. I believe there's a creator. And that's where I started from. That's where I rebuilt from. I was like, all right, there's a creator. I think that's very clear. I think that's very obvious. I don't know anything else besides that. And to a lot of degrees, like I'm still kind of there in a way. Like I don't firmly put myself into any camp, but I've also had this thing where like, I've always believed that Jesus's teachings were true. I should back up a little bit. So one of the things I did before I left the church was I decided that I was only going to read the red letter scripture. And for those that don't know what that is, that's just Jesus's words, according to the New Testament. So I basically threw out the Old Testament. I threw out all the books beyond like the Gospels. And I just read those. And I actually listened to it on audio tape over and over and over and over. I would have them going in my car and just listen to those over and over and over. And I couldn't find fault in that stuff. Like, love your neighbor, be good to each other, love God, be kind, give to the poor. Like, there's really nothing in there that I could find that was like controversial. Yeah. So I was like, okay, well, Jesus's teachings seem to be legit. I like that guy. And I know there's a creator. So I got those two things now, right? So I'm balancing with this Jesus guy and the creator. So I've got these two paradigms I'm working with. And then I've been going down the last, I would say, two or three years now, I've been going down all these various rabbit holes related to those things. Like one of the things I recently started learning about was, have you guys heard of preterism?
Yeah, I have. Okay.
I don't think so.
So
it's like when you think the rapture is going to be.
So yeah, so it's this idea, and I'm going to preface this by saying I don't fully believe this, but I found some really interesting things in that. So it's one of the things I've been kind of, you know how when you get information and you just kind of put it in the back of your head, put another piece in the back of your head, and you're just kind of like holding all these puzzle pieces to see what fits.
Exactly.
It's not like I'm a preterist now and I believe that, but oh my goodness, sorry.
Yeah,
this is my alarm to go get my chicken eggs out of the coop.
And oh, by the way, Zoom like doesn't even register it.
Oh, really? Because it's really loud in here.
Yeah, but can't even hear it.
So basically, preterism is the idea that when Jesus said, this generation will not pass away before you see me come back, that it was literal, that Jesus came back, the rapture and tribulation happened like, I don't know, something like 30 or 40 years after his death and resurrection. And that the 1,000 years of Christ reigning on earth with like heavenly bodies and people and all that was like the Renaissance or the Dark Ages or the times when all like the cathedrals were being built and Bach and all that stuff was writing this beautiful music. There was beautiful art. It was like a really beautiful time in human history. A lot of amazing things were being done.
And those quote structures and buildings had no bathrooms. That got me when I heard about that. Yeah. That was like, none wow, that is like, interesting point to make.
Right. And this is a huge rabbit hole. It's really weird. And again, I know people are going to be like, this guy's crazy. And I don't really care. I've been called so many names by Christians at this point that it kind of just rolls off my back. I don't care. But it was really, and it's a really interesting theory that after that time would have ended, that we'd be now living in the time where they say that in the Revelation, it says that the devil will have supremacy over the earth for a short season or for a season.
Yeah.
So that could be where we're living now. Like, I mean, if you look around, it makes sense. Like the amount of evil and corruption and just like at the highest levels across the world, it's all run by evil people. Like the whole thing, it's like, it's very clear that the devil or Satan or whatever he's called in your belief system is in charge of this thing right now. Like, I think that's undeniable. So whether that's the time leading right up before the tribulation is supposed to happen or the tribulation already happened and we're in that second part, I don't know. I'll never know. Well, I'm sure I'll know at some point. Yeah. But, you know, that's kind of something I've been exploring and I've found it pretty interesting. And there's definitely people that if you watch some of these videos, they take it a little too far for me. Like they go, you know, like that, they're on spaceships flying around and they're going to come back and land a spaceship on top of the White House and all this stuff. But so I'm not necessarily down that rabbit hole that far, but I've found preterism to be pretty interesting. It's definitely something I've been exploring because what it does for me is it answers some of those questions I had that don't make sense. Like, and the verse that they always quote that I've always struggled with is Jesus said, surely this generation will not pass before I come back. Now, Christians have explained that away 100 different ways, and it's never satisfied me. It's never been like, oh yeah, that makes sense. It's always been like, that seems like a stretch. That doesn't, if you look at the actual words of what he said, you guys will not die before I come back, period. I mean, that's what the actual text says. So whether you want to add this and that to it, that's up to you. That's your belief. But, and so that was a big one for me. But then I guess stop me if I'm rambling here too much, because I feel like I'm kind of throwing out a lot of ideas out here, but
yeah, I'm you're fine. You're fine. I'm just going to inject there that I heard about that stuff too. Like, I want to say it was like a year or two ago. No, a couple of years ago, I think, is when I heard about.
Yeah, that's when it became real prevalent, I think.
Yeah, the short season and all that stuff. And it was very compelling at the time for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not saying it's wrong or it's not true. It's just like, for me, like I keep all those things, like you said, in the back of my mind.
Yep.
Maybe the puzzle pieces will come together at some point, but I still don't know what that time is. I still don't know what all those years of, like, you know, building of amazing structures and all stuff. To me, it's like, was it a golden age perhaps? And that golden age is, yeah, like some people say that's Jesus' 1,000 year reign, right? Could that be the golden age? Like lots of cultures call it different things. I don't remember what it's called. Like Kali Yuga is what we're allegedly living in right now. But I don't know what, I can't remember what they call the golden age in the, is it Hindu or?
Yeah, whatever Hindu, that I is. Can't remember either.
Yeah, but yeah, it's like lots of cultures call them different things. So, I just kind of like tuck those things away. And like, because I want to see it from like a bird's eye view perspective. You know?
Yeah, I find that like all of these different pockets of conspiracy or truth or community topics, you can take, I always like to break it down, like I said before, like say there's 30 points that they make, these same 30 points, and 25 of them really make a lot of sense, but five don't. And then you take the next topic and the same thing, maybe they have 20 points and 18 of them make sense, but two don't. So, and those two or those 5 points that don't fit the whole rest of the narrative, a lot of people just throw the whole thing out because of that, but I don't. I take those points and, like I said, I add them all up. Maybe I take the Tartaria narrative and the preterism narrative and the, you know, whatever other narratives I can get my hands on and go down a rabbit hole. I kind of just pull what I can from it and try to piece it all together. But I think that's the journey of life. I think that's what we're meant to do. We're meant to constantly be learning about new things, constantly challenge our beliefs, and constantly add to our little bank of knowledge in our heads and put all these little puzzle pieces together as we go. Sorry, I got to take a drink of water.
Oh, you're fine.
You're good. And yeah, don't worry about rambling. This is the Oversharing Show. So that's what we say. People overshare. Trish Clark said, I love the rambles in the chat. So.
And yeah, she said, no one will call you crazy. We love everyone's opinions here on the Oversharing Show.
Here on the Oversharing Show.
Yeah.
And I'd like to also add, I recently was into The Archivist. It's a YouTube channel where he just goes and reads all these articles from the 1800s. Mm-hmm. And he, before this, he spent like 10 years just categorizing them all on Twitter. And now a few months ago, maybe even sometime in the middle of this year, he started his own channel and it's quickly gained a lot of popularity, but
you'll have to send me that link.
What's that?
You'll have to send me that link. I'm interested. Yeah.
Oh, it's so interesting because the stuff that they found in Alaska, California, Arizona, all over, all these articles they write about these cities that they would find, mummies they would find, like full standing petrified forests where the trees were turned into crystal and like copper and all this stuff. Then they send in mining companies to cut them down. But one of the biggest structures I think ever was found in Arizona where it could have housed like a million people or something crazy. And there's just miles of canal. And a lot of that canal they still use today. They just unburied it around Phoenix and now they use it. It's all like terracotta work and stuff.
I've heard of that. Yeah, I've heard of that. I went down that rabbit hole for a bit too. That's interesting stuff.
Yeah. So I really feel like there was some other kind of age, if you will. You know, you look at like Lord of the Rings or the Wheel of Time and all this stuff. They talk about different ages. And I think there definitely was some kind of other age before us with a different type of technology. And perhaps they had a whole different spiritual view as well. And I do agree that we are living in some kind of materialistic age right now where everybody, you know, it's just like the upside down pentagram represents where we're at right now. And it just means you're putting the four elements above spirit, which is just really what materialism is. You think that everything here is real and that's the chief thing in your life and there's nothing beyond it and there's no other kind of like higher purpose or anything like that. So I definitely can feel that. And that's why I think a lot of these ideas make sense to people, because like you said, there's so much good truth in it. And then there's just this little bit of like bullshit, right?
Yeah.
But I think that's what keeps the people divided so much. It's that those little sticking points or the dogma or the like magic words you have to say if you won't say them. That's what causes this division where like if more people, I think, were a little more open-minded with the puzzle piece thing that you said, which is like my whole life I've been doing that, right?
Putting same here. Yeah.
And I think that is probably a much better way to live. But again, we're not making judgments here on the Oversharing Show because we understand the way everybody's raised. We're kind of like shoved into this materialistic view. But yeah, I could see that.
Slowly and waking up out of it.
Another thing really quick too, people will put different words in symbols behind things. So like some people might call it this and some people might call it that, but I think it's like an allegory to what is going on right now. So whether the actual events happened, we're not exact, you know, no one's actually sure. And that's where people start to argue, right? And I think it's better to keep an open mind, because if you're not, if you don't have the open mind, then you could be wrong. And if you're wrong, then you might want to deny it and fight about it and all this stuff. Whereas if you were right, or you're pointing toward the truth, why would you even have to argue? You know, like truth needs no defense, right? That's what I
right.
So
I just like noticed that whole, like, the truther community has this weird way of like building things up and then crashing them down. And when they're crashed down, it's like you're not allowed to talk about it anymore. And like Tartaria got built up for years as this thing, and there's all this proof of these things that don't fit. And then it got like debunked somehow, like over the last, I don't know if you guys noticed that, but like the last year or so, it's been like, oh no, that's all bull crap. And then, but then I'm left there going like, well, what about all this stuff? Like, yeah. What about all this like mounds and mounds of videos and evidence of these things that don't fit? And they're, you know, they don't work with all these narratives. And then we're just supposed to throw it out because they found one inconsistency in one area or something. So yeah, I think that's,
and that's true, you, perhaps it was just using the word Tartaria to describe it all.
Yeah. When,
you know, okay, fine. Pick another word.
Right.
But there's something still there that we need, you know, not we need to figure out, but like, if you want, there's information there that's interesting.
Yeah. Right. Like you can throw the whole thing out, but that doesn't mean that these buildings weren't still buried in mud. Like we see that all over the place, the like windows half buried.
Yeah.
And we see these buildings that we cannot reproduce today, with no bathrooms, you know, like all these things are still there, like as much as you want to debunk the whole thing. But I think you're right. I think that the word Tartaria is what kind of ended up killing that whole, that whole truther rabbit hole. Was like, you know, Tartaria was this one empire at one point, which is historically accurate. But the fact that they ran with it and said that it was worldwide and they had all these things, and I think that's what kind of threw it off, is that maybe that wasn't true. Maybe there were all these different empires and stuff like that that had different names. So yeah, we should come up with a different name for that theory. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's golden age. Like, I don't know,
golden age. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that is great. I love that. It's like they debunked this theory, but the mysteries still stand, but nobody wants to talk about these mysteries, right? It's like,
right.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And I think the preterism has an interesting theory on it. If you believe in the Christian God, which I do, then that adds up, that explains all that. And it doesn't explain it fully. It's not like I'm fully in that camp, like I said, but like there are some things that I'm like, oh wow. So if that were the case and Jesus did reign already, that would explain all that right off the bat. Like the free energy, the, you know, the amazing things we saw come out of that would be explained by that.
100%. And the funny thing too is, you know, somebody could look at you and like, oh, you're crazy for this idea, but because, you know, some people don't believe Jesus was an actual person. But even if you're one of those people, it could have been, the idea was the lifestyle and idea of Jesus reigned for 1,000 years. Like people reigned in that
the Christ that consciousness.
Yeah, that's what I was just gonna say. It took the words out of my mouth. The Christ consciousness could have been like the paradigm of the time.
Absolutely.
100%. And that's why Sharon and I love to look at all these different ideas and stuff, because again, we look at it like it's like an analogy, or we try to find the hidden wisdom, just like a parable is a nice little fun story, but then there's like hidden messages that will hit people at different levels depending on their consciousness and where they're at. So I think, yeah. I could see that 100%.
It's pretty interesting. So if you want, I can get into the last one that I've been going through lately. And it's, I'm trying to find the word here. I'm looking off. It's called Martianism.
Okay.
So apparently there was this biblical scholar, I'm talking like from the years like 70 to 130. Like,
yeah, spelled Marcion. I've heard him called Marcion too. I don't know.
Yeah, Marcion, something like that. So anyway, this guy, he was swiftly kicked out and demonized because he believed that the God that's described in the Old Testament pretty often, not every single time, but like the overreigning arching God of the Old Testament was actually Lucifer. That when you hear the word Yahweh, he's actually talking about the evil one. And I've gone down the rabbit hole on that. And it makes a lot of things make sense to me, because one of the things I always struggled with was Christianity. I'm like, we have this God who's loving. We got this Jesus guy who says all these great things. But then you got this God in the Old Testament that's like having people go into Jericho and murder everyone, like murder all the men, women, and children so they can take the land for themselves. And they're like, yay, yay. You know, like you're learning Bible school when you're 7 years old that this was a triumphant victory for the Jews because they went in and slaughtered all these innocent people. And you're like, that doesn't sound like Jesus. Like, doesn't sound like something Jesus would do. Right. So like that didn't fit. And then
what would Jesus do?
Right. Slaughter a bunch of kids. And then you've got even the biblical flood story of like, let's just destroy every living creature on earth. That doesn't sound like something a loving God or like what Jesus, it feels like Jesus and Yahweh contradict. And exactly. I've watched some videos where it says that Jesus never associated himself with Yahweh in the entire New Testament. He talks about his father, but he never says it's, you know, never connects those two.
Yep.
And the other one would be like circumcision. Like, yep. I've always had a problem with that. Yep. Like this God who supposedly created us in his image and we're perfect.
Perfect.
But we got to slice the tip of our young son's wieners off, like to prove our allegiance to him. Like, it's fucking barbaric. Excuse my language. I don't know if I can swear on here, but.
Oh, yeah. We marked this podcast as explicit because we don't know what people are going to say. Well, I don't care. I curse all the time. I mean, not all the time, but.
Yeah. So the circumcision thing has always been one of my biggest sticking points with the God of the Old Testament. And I mean, there's other ones. There's the slaughtering of animals to please him. That doesn't make sense to me either. Like, I'm going to create all these creatures. I want you to take your best one, your prettiest, nicest one, and slice its throat for me and let all its blood run all over the place.
Like, and then burn it on an altar.
Yeah, that makes no sense to me. That sounds like something Satan would do. Chopping dicks off sounds like something Satan would do. Destroying cities sounds like something Satan would do. So when you take all these things and you put them together, I'm like, Yahweh sounds horrible. I don't want to follow that guy at all. Right? I like this Jesus guy. He makes sense to me. Right? And so my thought and the whole thing with Marchione was that he thought like the God of the Old Testament was Lucifer, Satan, the fallen one, and that Jesus came back from the real God as God's actual God's son and was like, dude, you guys are following the wrong guy. I'm here to like abolish all that. I'm here to like set you free from that. These are a den of vipers. These guys are, you know, this is the synagogue of Satan. He's been a liar from the start. Like all these things, if you add them up, you're like, whoa, Jesus came here to be like, oh, you guys are following the wrong dude. It's me. It's my dad. My dad's the real dude, not this imposter. And when you look at it through that lens, it makes a lot of the problems I've had with Christianity make sense. It just does. Call me a heretic, call me a blasphemer. I don't care. It makes more sense to me. So that's kind of where I'm at. And lately I've been kind of mixing Marchionism and preterism together and they kind of fit together nicely. Like you can take those two theories and kind of mix them together and they kind of work out. So that's the journey I've been on lately. Cause like, I can't get over the fact that I feel like there's power in Jesus. I don't know what that means, but
yeah,
I mean, you hear countless stories of people defending themselves from like demon possession or evil things in their house in the name of Jesus. They say it, it goes away. And that's happened so many times. You can't ignore it. So there's something there.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is, but it's like, that's where I'm at. So that's kind of in a nutshell where I'm at. So if you guys have any questions about it or anything like that, I can expand on whatever.
Yeah. We've talked about that before. The last thing you just said, but what you were talking about with the whole Yahweh and all that stuff, we've also, talked about in the past, a video that I came across a couple of years back by a guy named Israel Anderson.
Yeah. I watched that one too. Yeah.
Okay.
Many ones I've watched, but his is really good.
Yeah. And that one is one of the ones that made me go, okay, this is making more sense to see the dis- the discrepancies and the just the contradictions, you know?
Yeah.
And then the other thing is people will use the word Lucifer, which is interesting because it really was one word, and I can't remember, I think it's in Isaiah or something. I can't remember where it's at, but where it was translated into the word Lucifer in Latin, which just means light bringer. So right. it's not even supposed to be associated with anything evil.
Right.
And what it was about, I think it was about a king or something in that time period. It wasn't, if I'm not mistaken, but people have turned it around into something evil and negative when it wasn't even the original word in the first place. And they used the word Lucifer. And so when they translated it to English from the Latin, they kept the word Lucifer in that one verse.
And that kind of turned into everything we know today about.
Yeah. And that's where you have the inversion of like Lucifer being an evil thing when it only just means light bringer.
The part of that Israel Anderson video that I found the most fascinating was the Garden of Eden story.
Yeah.
And what I really like that he does, and this is what I've done in my life, is I take the text literal and I try not to add anything to it. Because mm-hmm. I do find that a lot of the Christian stories, they take a verse and then they add all these assumptions on mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And then you hear these assumptions your whole life, and then you go try to find them in the Bible and they're not there. And I'm like, well, where did we get that from? That's something I've heard my whole life as being in the Bible, and it's not there.
Mm-hmm.
And like when he breaks it down, that Yahweh lied to Adam and Eve and said that if they ate it, they would die. Right. And mm-hmm. the snake didn't lie. The snake said, if you eat this, you will know good and evil. And that's mm-hmm. what happened to them.
And that's what happened. He didn't lie to them.
He didn't lie to them, but Yahweh did, like multiple mm-hmm. times. And they have that whole verse about like Yahweh walking through the garden to find them mm-hmm. and stuff. Like mm-hmm. he's a physical being.
Mm-hmm.
That made a lot of sense too, because Yahweh's always described as a physical flesh and blood being, or not flesh, maybe not flesh and blood, maybe whatever, light body or whatever, but like somebody that's in a physical location. But then when God, like the Father of Jesus, is described, it's like you can't even look at him. He's ethereal. He's not even something that's tangible. But then when you hear of Yahweh, it's not. He's like, he's walking through the garden, he's calling out for them, you know, things like that. So I recommend everyone watch the video, regardless of what you believe. I think there's some really interesting things in there. And even if it's just for entertainment and you want to just ignore it and say it's stupid, it's still a pretty interesting video. It's called Two Gardens and a Snake, I think.
Something like that. Yeah.
So it's just Israel Anderson on YouTube.
I'll link it in description later. But because I've linked that one. I might have linked that one before. We've talked about it on the show maybe a year or two ago. But the other thing too is that the snake has been demonized.
Mm-hmm.
Dare I use the word demon, because that word has been demonized too.
Yeah.
it just means messenger. Demon just means messenger.
Mm-hmm.
But the word snake, or the word, the actual animal, the creature, has mm-hmm. been demonized and made to look evil. And all it is a creature that lives, you know, and it's actually esoterically associated with wisdom. You
it's
know,
funny because I've always been obsessed with snakes my whole life. I pick them up and play with them. And
yeah. And then, you know, when you look at other cultures, you look at the Kundalini, it's basically describing your spine and the two energy, whatever things that go around your spine in the spiral. Mm-hmm. That's what it's describing. Even though you may, you know, you think of it as a couple of snakes, but like, yeah, snakes aren't evil. So like the way that guy Israel Anderson broke all that stuff down, like was like very, it was like revolutionary for me, you know?
Absolutely.
When I first saw it, I was like, holy smokes, dude.
Yep. It's like all these contradictions I've had in my head my whole life for 30 plus years,
right,
were finally answered by this one guy in his one video. And it's like, because I had always thought, and I had said this, and I could back it up with proof, I had always said that I felt like the God of the Old Testament wasn't the same, was evil, or whatever you want to call it.
That. Yeah, yeah. That the one from the Old Testament, it doesn't sound like the one from the New Testament.
Right.
Right. A lot of people have made those connections, but somehow because of indoctrination through religion and churches and Christianity, unfortunately,
yep,
you are made to have this cognitive dissonance of like yes but no, or no but yes,
yep,
of like it is the same God, but you know, because how can you believe that, like you were saying, the Father of Jesus, the Heavenly Father, mm-hmm, is loving and kind and good, and yet in the Old Testament, before Jesus is born, he's asking them to do all these murderous, hateful, horrible, atrocious things. Yep. It just clashes. How can you, it's cognitive dissonance, because how can you have those two things in your mind at the same time and say, oh, it's the same thing? It's not the same thing.
Yep. I think that's what leads a lot of people that grew up Christian to atheism. Because yes, I think they see these absolutely contradictions and they're like, mm-hmm, well, this story is bullshit. So they just throw the whole thing out. And it's throwing the baby out with the bathwater, mm-hmm, throwing baby Jesus out with the bathwater.
Yes, poor baby Jesus.
Because like, you know, there's like that. And I thank God, I never went down the full atheism route. I just like knew God was real, but just ignored him for a while. Like, I know you're up there. I just want to do my own thing for a while.
You didn't know what to do with it, right? I did a similar thing where I kind of had a similar growing up as you did. Fundamentalist, college, I'm like, wait, I'm kind of opening up my eyes. I wasn't so brash. I was not as out there, but I was starting to see some things. It didn't really honestly take me until I was probably after my husband passed away, where I was kind of like, wait, something's really not right here. And I had to start kind of like going my own way. But even still, it's literally 2020 had to happen for me to just like really wake the F up.
Yeah. It woke a lot of people up.
For real, you know? So it's just, yeah. And no negative talk about self, because that's just where you were, you know, that's just how it happened, and it's okay.
Yep. It is just nice, like over time, to have some answers finally, you know, because I, and it's funny because the preterism and Mashonism, those are not new ideas. Like a lot of those videos are a couple years old. I just somehow missed them and I didn't really discover them till recently. And like you said, too, it's kind of a weight off my shoulders in a way. It's like, okay, these contradictions I have can be resolved, and it's all right there. It's all right in the same book I've been reading this whole time. It's all right there. So that was refreshing, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it does make perfect sense too, especially if you look at the origins of the actual Bible, like how the version we have, or the many versions, were put together by the Romans, by Emperor Constantine, everybody, you know, from the Roman Empire. Yep. I think he kind of just like stuck his finger out to check the weather and was like in the wind direction. He's like, oh, you know, we got to switch this belief system up. We have, we're integrating all these people from other places. How are we going to control their mind? And I think that's kind of religion. The organized religion form, I think, is just a form of mind control, kind of like any other cult, just like government or the medical industry, for example. Allegedly, YouTuber, just, you know, I'm a comedian. It's a joke.
I'm playing a character.
Yeah, I'm doing a character. I'm a crazy conspiracy theorist. And we talk about this a lot on the show, where it really just breaks down to the ideology of a slave versus the ideology of a master or a free person. And when we say slave and master, we just mean over your own mind. You know, are you a slave to that voice in your head that keeps telling you can't do what you want to do, and The ego, the negative thoughts. Yeah, and all the negative thoughts. Because if you are a slave to that, if you take the as above, so below principle, somebody else is going to come in and be your master. And not that it's always a bad arrangement, you know, but as long as you're consciously aware of it. But if you are a master of your internal self and you have a lot of less of this turmoil going on inside, then you could actually choose your and create really your own life and kind of follow the path I think that God set out for you. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we talk about. That's all this is about. And I totally understand the backlash from Christians because of the dogma, right? You have this, these certain things you can't question. It's just like any other cult, right? If you question these core things, then you're going to get ostracized and made fun of and harassed and all this stuff, or kicked out or whatever.
I can't tell you how many Telegram chats I've been kicked out of just from, you know, and it's, you know, it's something as simple as maybe the God of the Old Testament was the devil. They're like, oh, you're banned. You're out of here. And I'm like, I can't even like, we can't even just discuss this. We can't, you know, like that's the thing that drives me nuts. Like at least discuss it. You can not believe it. You can say it's rubbish, but to get, when they start ad hominem attacking you and, you know, and just calling you all these names and calling you stupid. And it's like, it's just a thought. It's just an idea. It's just something I'm playing around with in my head. It makes some sense. Some things add up, some things don't. So like, why does it have to be that I'm a bad person for thinking this, you know? And that's what I get from a lot of Christians is that how dare you, you know, how dare you question anything? And that's what I've heard my whole life from pastors, from youth leaders. It's always been, you're not allowed to have these questions. The fact that you even have them alone is from the devil. You need to repent and ignore them, because if you let these thoughts seep into your head, you might lose your salvation. You might burn in hell. And that's what it always boils down to is, and actually, I think, let me bring this point up, because I've been thinking about this a lot. Like, why do Christians get so angry when these things come up, and why do they get so defensive? And I really feel like there's this guilt that's built into you where if you don't fully toe the line and fully defend every aspect of the Bible, then you could risk burning in hell, right? So that's subconsciously in the back of their head all the time. So they feel like they have to be keyboard warriors for God and defend every aspect of what their pastor told them, or they might burn in hell. Because if they don't, if they question it at all, boom, they might lose their salvation. They're gone. They're in hell forever. You know, and that whole burning in hell forever thing never sat well with me either. Like, I get the idea of judgment. I get that. I just don't see how, like, and I've used this example a million times. I'm not the only one to do this, but I'll just throw it out real quick. But it's like a guy that lives in South America in a jungle somewhere who's like the nicest guy in the world. He's the best guy in his village. He's super generous. He's always like picking papayas for everybody and like fixing their grass skirts for free and like really great guy. Never heard of God ever in his life. And he dies.
Jesus. So, never heard of Jesus in his
life. Never heard of Jesus. Never heard of God at all. Just never heard of any of it. I'm blank slate guy. He dies and then he burns in hell for eternity.
Right. That's the same questions I always had. Yep. And the fact that, like, okay, what I always thought too, what happened to the people before Jesus? If Jesus saves you, what happened to them?
Right.
Because like he wasn't even here.
Right. Are they just
always had that question. Made no freaking sense.
Yeah. And it doesn't make any sense. And I've heard all the Christian apologetics, but they try to explain it away with these big lofty word salad explanations. Yeah. And it just doesn't fit. Like, you can do all that and you can say, well, that's our explanation. That's the church's official explanation. And I can come back and say, that doesn't make any fucking sense. Yeah.
And I call bullshit.
Yeah, I call bullshit. And then the other one is like, the other example you can use on the other side is you got this guy who, like, a murderer and an R person, because I know you can't say that on YouTube, does the R word to a bunch of women, murders a bunch of people, is just horrible, horrible, horrible person his whole life. And then a week before he's set to be executed, he like literally has like an emotional breakdown. He gets down on his knees and he asks God for forgiveness, weeping tears in his eyes, 100% genuine, just falls down and just begs God for forgiveness, asks Jesus into his heart. He's killed a week later and he goes to heaven. Right. So like, how is that fair? How is that justice? You know, that doesn't, and I don't know, like these there's so many contradictions in the salvation and damnation story that I can't wrap my head around, because I understand their position. I've heard their position 1,000 times. It just doesn't fit. It doesn't mesh for me. So they're going to have to do better.
Yeah. And you also have the references made to reincarnation in the New Testament. We've talked about this on the show before, where one of the apostles asked Jesus, why is this man? Why was he born blind? Was it because of something he did in a previous life or something like that?
Yeah.
And we even went back and broke it all down. So it's like these little clues that are left in there for people who, you know, because I don't think so. When people talk about organized religion, and like I even mentioned Constantine and all this stuff, I still have the point of view that he might not have been an evil person. He might just have said, hey, I'm going to rule these people because they need a ruler and we have to do something. So we're going to tell them this, but we might leave clues in there for a person who is a potential master. And then they could figure it out and they don't need our support. They could go be sustainable or do whatever they have to do, you know? So right. I don't even think, I'm not even coming at it from like a judgmental point of view. So, but yeah, because if you take the concept of reincarnation, it really does leave a lot of, or it really makes a good argument for like actually learning lessons in this. And then some people will, they say, well, then why would you forget? You know, if you have a life that you lived, why would you forget? And why would you wake up and not know it? Because how are you going to learn anything? And I think that if there wasn't this forget that when we woke up or whatever it was, or if there wasn't this connection, we wouldn't truly be bonded into this realm. We wouldn't actually believe it. And so therefore we couldn't learn any lessons, because we would know that it's all a dream or whatever, where now we kind of can figure that idea out, that it's about that, but there's no positive proof. So we always have to take it on faith. So it's like another element of this.
Yeah.
So I feel like living multiple lifetimes, even if it's not the same person, because I think that also people can fall into reincarnation thing and say, you know, I lived a past life as it was my consciousness exactly. I really more feel like we're all kind of part of this consciousness, and then it gets split, and then all of a sudden, because I really feel like we're energy on the other side of this, and then we get split into this physical realm, so-called physical realm, and we have to like piece at a time, we have to figure it out and then kind of elevate. So I don't even think that I like Brandon lived past other lives, just maybe parts of me. But as we go on, I feel like when they talk about karma, like things bounce off each other, or they're waves that have to go and then dissipate before we can learn our lessons and all that stuff. So that's kind of where I'm at with this. But again, I'm not married to it. I'm not going to debate or argue somebody. Like, I'll have a discussion if they're interested, but spiritual ideas, anything you can't prove, it's just a mystery. And I feel like in my life anyway, once I was okay with accepting mysteries, it was so much better, because then I didn't have to have it all figured out. I could just follow my intuition. I know when I'm doing something wrong, you know, and what is that voice that's telling me? What's it connected to? Maybe it's God that it's connected to, you know, and maybe I'm supposed to act like Jesus. That's why I look like him almost. but 100%.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's like personally, I've never gone down. Well, I can't say I've never gone down the reincarnation rabbit hole, because I have. I don't prescribe to it personally, but I like what you said about like a hive consciousness, that like parts of it break off. Cause I think that each human that's ever existed is unique, so that reincarnation doesn't fit into that mindset that has a, you know what I mean? So like, I think to me, it's always like limited. Like, I've always felt like reincarnation has this like limited mindset. I'm not picking on you. This is my thoughts on it.
Oh yeah. I think just
there's really only so many souls to go around.
You define how you define reincarnation too.
And I think,
because I've never heard it said like you just said, and that makes a lot of sense, where it's like little splits of an overall consciousness.
Yeah. That, I think that's how it gets sold in a new age way, because it really has to do with attachment, because, you know, it lets people not fear death, which is a good thing. I don't think you should fear death, but it makes them say, oh, I'm going to be me in the other life. When I die, I'm going to come back as a cowboy or whatever, an astronaut. I'm going to fly to Mars. And so it's another kind of like, I guess, escapism or trap or whatever. But yeah, that's why I always like to explain myself for when I talk about reincarnation, because it's such a loaded word, just like any of these words you talk about, like God, right? Or, you know,
right. And everyone's got the correct name that you're supposed to use for all these different things.
Right.
That always drove me nuts too. I'm like, that's why I always say, like, the evil one, the devil, whatever you want to, whatever he's called in your life view. But we all know who we're talking about.
And I watched parts. My woman watched this whole Netflix series about cults, and I walked in and watched parts of it, but they talked about jargon, how all these cults have their own jargon. And it's the same, like, I play poker and it's the same thing. Like, all the poker players have this jargon at the table that everybody knows and they use, and they feel like they're in this cool group, you know, it's the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very true. Yeah.
Another example I was going to bring up, I think I brought it up the last time we talked about reincarnation, maybe that was last week. But it was when Jesus said, "Who do people say that I am?" And some people were saying, "Oh, some say that you're Elijah." So like the spirit of Elijah coming back into another being, right? So it wasn't the same, right? Because he was Jesus, not Elijah, but the spirit of Elijah, like the whole
I could see that, like, you come back as a new unique thing, but like
with the similar...
And there's another example of that where in Revelation, some, I can't remember exactly who, but like two or three Old Testament figures prophets were supposed to come back. Yes. Prophets were supposed to come back and walk the earth in like modern times.
Yeah.
So I also wonder too, if you apply preterism to that, that those guys already existed. They already walked the streets of Rome and were killed, you know, like that already all happened possibly in that mindset. So it's really fascinating stuff. Actually, it's really fun. And like I said, cause I always try to like preface everything, but like, even if you don't believe it, it's still a fun thought experiment. Like, at least let yourself experience a thought experiment. Read, if you're a Christian listening to this, pick up some non-canonical ancient text and read them. What's the harm? You know, read the Book of Enoch, read the Gospel of Thomas, read some of these books that were told are evil.
Right.
And you might glean some knowledge out of them. Or you might say, oh, this solidifies what I already believed. This is nonsense. But if you just shut it off and you're like, I'm not even going to look at it.
Wow.
You know, that's just wrong.
This what you just said made me think too of like people who are like, let's say they're religious and they're Christian and they have a certain sect that they belong to, whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're totally okay with reading fantasy and novels and other stuff. But God forbid they read like the Book of Enoch or the Book of Joshua or, you know, extra biblical canonical texts. Because God forbid that's, you know, it's evil or something. It's like,
right.
But you're okay believing in some, like, you're cool, like injecting yourself into this fantasy world that someone here, like in the like 20th century, 21st century wrote, and you're okay, like fantasizing and believing in that. And that's cool. And you know, like wizards and, you know, all this stuff, and you're cool with that, but you're not cool with it in real life. Like, what if that was real? What if that is real?
Right. Maybe that's based on real stuff.
Exactly.
Or like, even like
rings based on our past. Mostly. I really have a feeling that a lot of that stuff is a lot more true than we want.
The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, absolutely could be.
As I've been listening to it, I'm kind of like, holy smokes, I wonder, right?
The Silmarillion stuff too, and the Silmarillion story of creation I talk about a lot. But yeah, if you haven't looked into that, just look into that part. It's crazy about everything was basically created with sound and singing, you know.
That is, I mean, God spoke the word, you know, it's vibration, it's energy.
100%.
Yeah. And the other thing I was thinking about is, you know, how you go to these churches and you're not allowed to question, right? Yep. And it's like, okay, if you do a thought experiment, like you said, and you're like, okay, God is all loving and amazing creator and father. Okay. And you're like, okay, I'm not a parent, but let's say I were a parent, right? And my kid comes and asks me a question about anything. Like, am I going to be like, you're not allowed to ask that question, little Joey or Peter or whatever? You're not allowed to ask that question. That's really right. Ridiculous, right? Wouldn't you lovingly want to answer the question as a parent? Like, wouldn't your heavenly father, creator, God, whatever you want to call him, wouldn't he be openly open and like willing to listen to your question and answer you? Like, you know what I mean? It doesn't make any sense to like right. have these taboo things.
It's because they don't have an answer for it.
Exactly.
And the ones that they do try to answer, it's always the can't. It's funny because you can go to any church in any, probably any country, but at least any state in the United States, and you'll get the same canned answers about these contradictions that we all have. And like, we're not the first people to have these contradictions. This has been happening for 2,000 years since this story came out. It's so people have had these same things, these same debates, these same theology debates have been happening for centuries, millennia. And so that what's happened is the church has developed these canned answers, and then they just get repeated, you know, and you get these biblical scholars, these apologists that'll make it sound really flowery else. And, you know, or they'll just do like the debate techniques where they try to pick apart your question to make you seem like the crazy one. And, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and they'll never actually hit the essence of your question.
And how is that a Christian thing to do, to like make you think that you're the crazy one and you're insane and you're better because you know better than they do?
Right.
Like, is that really a Christian thing to do? No.
Or even just judging in general. That's the irony of all this. The central figure in most Christians' belief system is this guy who has all this great wisdom and tells you how to live, but nobody seems to really be living up to that. It's more about worshiping him. And it's funny because it just comes back to everyday stuff that happens today with, you know, cults or whatever they are, where there's a central figure that's put on a pedestal. And you see this a lot on the internet too. Somebody has a following and they put them up on a pedestal, and when someone's on a pedestal, you always have to have somebody like in the pit, somebody to demonize and someone to point at, where it's like, you think that's what Jesus would want to do? You know, it's so funny. That's exactly what if Christians ever try to talk to me or whatever, if a Jehovah Witness ever came to my house, I'd totally have a conversation with them about space and all that stuff. But but then I would, you know, also ask them, well, maybe not Jehovah's Witnesses as much. It's funny too, because like people like Mormons and stuff, they actually live the lifestyle. Like I know a comedian, my friend Rodney Norman, and he's a Mormon, and he talks about all these ideas. Like he's been on my show and we've talked about all kinds of Buddhist ideas and philosophy, and he's like open to all of it. So I feel like some people out there get it, but the majority of people don't in this Christian religion. Yeah.
That's why I say just give it a try. Like, what's, you know, there's no harm in expanding your knowledge, whether it's, or, you know, like the other argument you can make is Christians will say, don't read this book. It's non-canonical. It's from the devil. Don't read it. But then they'll be like, oh, we really need to read the Quran because we need to know what our enemy is doing. You know, so they'll like encourage people reading the Quran.
How about love your enemies like Jesus said?
Right. That's a whole nother can of worms. Right? But so it's,
Jesus even said, I came not to judge.
Right. Yep.
It's all
case
there.
Closed. I rest my case, Your Honor.
Sorry, Zach, I interrupted you.
No, that was all I had. Just that like they kind of have contrarian beliefs. Not, I mean, obviously they have contrarian beliefs, that's we just talked about that for an hour, but like they have like, it's okay to read something if you're doing it to like art of, you read the book The Art of War, right? So I'm going to read this so that I can understand what my enemy is doing, right? Your perceived enemy. So they'll read this book to understand what their perceived enemy is doing. But how dare you read something that is actually about the God that you worship, that, you know, that a bunch of Roman politicians decided wasn't right for the book. That's the other point I always make about the Council of Nicaea. It was Roman politicians. It wasn't these like exalted men. It was men. Like if you look at the politicians we have today, like
it was them.
imagine Congress putting together the Bible right now. That's what it is.
That's what they're doing right now. They're putting forth a new Bible.
Oh, really? I didn't hear about this.
No, I'm just kidding. But like with everything like, they do, with all the laws and all the stuff, that's their new Bible.
Right. And like, what about the stuff that like, what about the, like, let's say the official story is true. What about the Christians that lived from the year Jesus died up until the year 300 or whatever it was when the Council of Nicaea decided on the Bible? Like, were they just reading blasphemy? Were they, you know, like, cause they were reading all those texts and they didn't have them together as one book, but they were like, oh, this one. I think there's something like 180 non-canonical books that were like considered Abrahamic texts that are not in the Bible, like 180. There's a ton of them. There's more outside than there are inside. And then you get these people that are like, this is the word of God. Nothing can be taken or added to it. Right.
Yeah.
They say that all the time, but they can't even agree on how many books are in it across the sects. Like even Catholic to Protestant are like, they 66 books, 73 books and 88 books in the three major Bibles. They can't even agree on which ones are in it today, 2000 years later. So how am I supposed to be like, oh, ours is right, all the other ones are wrong? You know, I've been told by a Catholic that only Catholics go to heaven.
But like, that's a cult right there.
Yeah.
When you have that kind of like mentality, that's a total cult.
Yep. And I'll preface this with not all Christians, because I know there's going to be people that are like, I would never say that. Yeah. I never, you know, of course, we're speaking in generalities.
Yes.
I'm speaking about my personal life experience too. This is things I've heard from pastors, from other Christians.
Mine too.
Yep.
100%. Yep. Yeah, I went to Assemblies of God Church from like fourth grade to sixth grade. And I was going to a Catholic school at the time, but it was all that dancing and everything's the devil and all that stuff. And, you know, I read the Bible a bunch and I was involved in the Bible studies and all that. And after that, I kind of just wandered along. And even in the Marine Corps, they have like church and stuff you can go to, and especially in boot camp. And they have one of those crazy dancing around churches. Mm-hmm. So it always felt right to me. I never really had any of those questions until a little later. And then I came across astrotheology, which kind of shows how everything's just written in the stars. And it really blew my mind. And I kind of went down the path of,
or that it's symbology. It's all symbols.
Yeah. Mm. I went down the path of like atheism or like agnosticism, I guess, until I kind of got back into my current belief system that I have now. But yeah, the whole thing about not asking questions, it's totally crazy.
Yeah, I've gone down mildly down the astral theology part, where like all the stories in the Bible are like, yeah, written in the stars. They're describing things we can see to this day up there in stories about that. That stuff's pretty fascinating too. And there's definitely some truth there. And it's like another one of those things where you can read it, glean some knowledge from it, put it in the back of your head and be like, yeah, there's some obvious things here when you hear it broken down that are hard to deny. And then they just see how they fit with everything else. And I think we're just going to be doing that forever. We'll have these talks forever, you know, and thank God for the internet in a way, because we're able to explore ideas that we wouldn't have access to at all. You know, you'd just be stuck in the same church with the same pastor telling you the same story that they heard in theology school. You know, you might not ever be exposed to all these new ideas and different breakdowns and things like that.
Yeah.
And also it's like, how much more wondrous would it be if the story is written in the sky and we could see it every night? You know what I mean?
Right.
That's what people don't think of. And I had this, it's kind of an off beat thought, but since we're talking about stars and space and stuff, I was thinking about this last night, cause I was looking at the moon and I think it's almost full. Tomorrow will be a full moon.
Yep.
And I had this thought that popped into my head, which is, you know how we're always taught in school that, like, for example, like the Greeks or the Romans, they had these gods, or even like they'll talk about like Indian cultures, or, you know, whatever you want to call them, natives, mm-hmm. where they will ascribe things that they can't understand to gods. So like if there's thunder or wind or whatever, they'll make these gods and they'll say the god is doing this. And, you know, from the point of view we're taught, we're like, oh, these silly savages, they just didn't understand how weather works, so they had to make it, you know. Well, what if that's exactly what our culture is doing with the sky at night? You know, we can't explain. Mm. What if we can't explain what the moon is, or these stars, or these wandering planets and all this stuff? So we have to make up this mythology or this story about space so people can actually accept it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had a Nikon P1000 for a couple of years for that exact reason. I bought one because I went down the flat earth rabbit hole. I went down all these rabbit holes pertaining to the moon and the sun and all these things. And I was like, well, I can't really trust. I mean, I can trust, but I always question everything I see in video because video can be altered and pictures can obviously be photoshopped and things like that. And then people can lie. So I'm like, I'm going to get this camera. I'm going to see for myself. And what I saw was it was shocking. Some of the things I saw with, like, when you zoom in on a star, like I zoomed in on the Sirius, the dog star one time. I did it a few nights in a row and it's seven-sided. It's not a circle. It's like, it's a seven-sided shape. And inside of that are concentric seven-sided rings inside. And then in the very center is a seven-sided black hole. Dead center. And you can see it for yourself with the camera. And I'm like, that is not a burning ball of gas a billion zillion light years away. It's just not. Like, it's silly to think that when you see it with your own eyes, you know, get your own camera and watch it. It's, and like, you can, and when you zoom in on the moon still is such a mystery because I've looked at it a million times. Like my screensaver right here is a picture that I took of the moon. It does look like a ball to me. Like, it does. I don't know. And it just doesn't look, 700,000 miles away to me, but what do I know, you know? But again, that's another, it's another rabbit hole of mysteries that we can just kind of glean what we can and file it away.
Yeah. Another thought I wanted to put out there is that there are lots of ways to view scripture and lots of people can interpret it from different angles. So you can look at it, for example, like you have the literal, right? That people yep. say that these things are the literal things that happened, Adam and Eve, and then all these people and their descendants, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
That's one way to look at it. You can look at it in allegory as well. And lots of people do this. Lots of people mm-hmm. have done this. Bill Donahue, I don't know if you've seen his stuff, but I think I sent you a link at some point.
Possibly. It sounds familiar, but
he does that. And it's kind of related to like astrotheology and symbolism. And you relate it ends up relating well with a lot of the other cultures around it. So like yep. when you're talking about the word, the number seven in Revelations, there's a lot of sevens in there. You can yep. relate that to the seven chakras. You can relate it a lot of things like, the ladder, that Jacob's ladder, whatever, you can relate that to your spine, yep. you know, your father in heaven, you can relate that as your higher self or the God consciousness, the Christ consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things can be allegory. They're just using a word as a symbol to describe, something that happens in the body, in your physical manifestation. But there's a lot of esoteric things that you can relate it to. So there's people that use it to talk about lawful and legal things. Like you can hear like people like Tom Barnett and all these other guys talk about how Jesus used the scripture to talk about the law. And even Aaron Abke's getting into it. He just recently did a show with Cal Washington about the lawful legal type stuff, but he's also very like metaphysical, spiritual type. And he talks about that, but then he recently started getting into the topic of the lawful stuff. So that's also an interesting rabbit hole to get into.
Yeah. That stuff is fascinating. Sorry. Go ahead, Brandon.
I was just going to say it makes total sense because if it is written in the stars, then maybe it does happen. And it manifests here in our physical reality that way. You know, even the story of Jesus, because some people will say it's just in the stars and people took it from that and then made him a person, but yep. it could be both. And I talk about this a lot, like somebody could have lived in, you know, we're not going to get that story. And I'm sure that's not the story the Romans handed down to us, but it could have been inspired by a person who went through a lot of this stuff And then they probably took his name and put it on some guy, you know, that had like some political power and then said it was him and all the stuff. But because back then, a lot of the people who were going to be wanted to be emperors or even pharaohs or rulers, they also had the religion tied through them too. So they had to be like the god emperor or the god king and all that stuff. So it was always used politically. If you just look at how things are done today, you know, also all you have to do is look at it and then kind of get the idea. It's just like history, right? We hear about Pearl Harbor and we hear about like the Civil War and slavery and all this in school, but then we see what happened in 2020 and we see what the mainstream narrative is, and that's probably how it's going to go down in history. But we all know it wasn't probably the mainstream was way off, right? So
oh yeah,
it's always that's like a good point of truth, I think, in these stories. That's how they're also able to survive for so long, I believe. So yeah, and being open-minded about it, I think, really is the key. Because, you know, what if you die and you get in front of God or whatever, and he's like, the whole point was to just not judge people.
<You know? laughs> That was like the one rule I had.
That's it, man. That's all you had to do, you know?
Love,
like,
no, love and non-judgment, basically. Same thing.
Like, I don't need anyone to defend me. I created all this, you know? And the other thing is, like, if there is a God and a creator, why would he create people to just be subservient to him? You know, that doesn't really make a lot of sense to me at all. Wouldn't he want people to actually gain some kind of higher consciousness or omniscient on their own?
It's like when you, it's like a parent, right? You don't have your children to be subservient to you. Some people might, but I wouldn't. That's not my, that wouldn't be my goal. My goal would be to educate them to be upstanding citizens, if you will, you know what I mean? to have a brain for themselves and figure things out for themselves, right?
Yeah,
not to indoctrinate them into subservience, you know?
That's exactly what we do with our son. It's like, we're always just trying to like make him, not make him, but like train him to be open-minded.
Absolutely.
Train him to be a nice, kind person, generous person. Just like, you know, not be addicted to his phone, or not, he doesn't have a phone, but like not be addicted to screens and, you know, just try to, and that's like the thing, like I want to, everyone always says they want to raise their kid to be better than they are.
Mm-hmm,
so like you would equate that to God. God wants to raise us not to be better than God, but like to be like you said, to strive for the Christ consciousness, whether you believe God or Jesus was a real person or not.
Yeah.
You can still strive for those ideas. You can still take those texts and be like, wow, these are sound pretty good. I can't, you know, maybe I should just try to put these into my life and live like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What did Jesus say? You will do greater things than I.
Yes,
right.
Yeah. Did.
With the faith of a mustard seed, you can move a mountain.
Absolutely.
So like he's saying that we all have, and that's the one potential of the ones that really start setting the Christians off. Cause I went down that Gnostic path for a while. And where it's like, we're all God, we all have these capabilities. And it's like, Jesus said it.
Yes,
we do.
Absolutely.
And like they will get so mad at you and be like, oh, everyone's a God. You're a blasphemer. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but Jesus said it in his own words to the disciples that you could do greater things than I can. You can like, do greater things than I did. You can move mountains. You can do all these things. So like we have it in us. So maybe Jesus, the story is to like teach people how to manifest that in themselves. Like maybe the culmination of being a human spirit is to become like a God or become like God.
Yeah, maybe it's training for the next level of consciousness, right? You know, maybe that's what this is. We're kind of getting toward the end here, so we won't go on too many rambles, but if you look into like the law of one and you know, stuff like that, it just talks about different levels of consciousness. And when we're in this particular realm, we have this free will, which we don't usually have. That's why you will hear people say like angels don't have free will and stuff like that. I feel like it's kind of like an allegory to, in this position we're in right now, we're tricked into this physical experience and we have to abide by these rules, and you know, if we don't, there's consequences. But in that medium, in this realm, we're able to actually learn lessons because of it. Mm. We're actually able to, if we want, we can go be a heroin addict forever and, you know, whatever, you
learn,
can do whatever you want.
We can learn from that.
Until that voice inside you has enough and you get to a point where you have like a reckoning where you're like, I don't want to do this behavior anymore, whatever it is. And then you come to it on your own. And I
just
feel like
that murderer who breaks down and says, I was wrong for doing all that. Yep. Right.
The redemption story.
Right.
100%. Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. So something Brandon said that made me, it made me think of something I read in Eileen McCusick's book. She writes a book about biofield tuning, or she wrote two books about it. I can't remember which book this is in, but she talks about how people either, and I think it's this, don't quote me, but I think it's where people think that you're like, this is either a spiritual thing or a physical thing or whatever. Or I think she was talking about, you know, how in science, they're like, they don't like the concept of like ether, but they're very physical. Like everything is happening in the physical. And they have no desire to even think that it could be happening in the ether, like in the ethereal realm. Like they just have zero desire to even look into that. She's like, I'm a bothist because I believe it's possible in both. Like, I believe it's a both thing. Right.
Sure.
Which reminds me also of a little meme thing that I saw the other day that says, I'm an omnist, a person who does not claim any one religion, practice, or belief, but finds truth in them all, which I really resonate with.
Yeah, you sent me that. I like that.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, 100%. Well, this has been great, Zach. Do you have any other final thoughts or anything you want to leave us with before we end the show and I do the plugs and stuff?
Yeah, I do feel like God is telling me to talk to the Christians that are watching this right now. And what I want to say to you is get the book of Enoch and read it. Get some extra biblical texts and read them and really pray on them. And one of the other ones I'd really recommend to open up your mind that is not contradictory to the Bible at all, and it really helps understand it, our universe is the Kybalion. So highly, highly recommend reading the Kybalion, Book of Enoch, Jasher, Gospel of Thomas, and just keep expanding from there. And then use that to cross-reference with the Bible that you've grown up with too. And have an open mind and pray.
Absolutely.
Great words of wisdom. Yeah, the Kybalion, I really enjoy that piece of work. It's really
awesome.
Good.
One of the most life-changing books I've ever read. It's really good.
Yeah. Well, thank you again, Zach and Sharon. You have anything? I'm just going to give a shout out quickly, I guess, to the chat. Yeah. Thank you guys so much for hanging out. We didn't really interact with you guys that much in this episode, but I think that's okay because you guys seem to be loving it and we're bringing up some great points.
Gordy
so
says, Gospel of Mary, read it.
There you go.
I haven't read that one yet. I'll definitely check that out. Yeah. I think I actually have it over here somewhere because
I probably have it somewhere too in my little stack over here.
I've got a book that's supposed to have all the extra, extracurricular, all the extra biblical text all in one big book. And I haven't really dug into that yet. So I've done some of it, but.
Yeah, I have some. I have this whole shelf, I think. And then a little bit of the bottom one has some of those all extra canonical and extra biblical, whatever texts in there. So yeah.
Can I make one suggestion for you guys?
Yeah.
Sure.
Can you guys start a Telegram group where we can like post links and stuff related?
Oh,
to
no,
the...
you can join our Telegram group. We have one.
Oh, you have one. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Send me the link. I'd love to join.
Yeah. We have an oversharing Telegram group where there's a bunch of fun, like-minded people in there. And sometimes we meet up and go hiking and stuff when Sharon's in this area, cause some of the people are in this area. So yeah.
Yeah. We're not, you and I aren't too far. So let's do it. Let's do it again. We've gone hiking before. Let's do it again.
Yes. 100%. Let's do it again. All right, everybody. Well, thank you guys again for the chat. If you want to support us, the best way to do that is to just subscribe to the Brandon Bonanza YouTube channel. Thumbs up, share this stuff with people you think that might find it interesting. And also you can go to morelawsmoreproblems.com. That's my website that I've had now for over 10 years. Check out my blog. You could check out all the stuff that I wrote. Even from 10 years ago, I was nailing it, you know, and I didn't exactly have the same worldview that I do now, but I was still pretty much nailing it, if I do say so myself. Another thing I wanted to announce too is my, like I was saying earlier, my Tarot Bowl podcast with my friend Ashley, that we've covered basically every card in the whole tarot previously, and we took about a 2-year break, but we're back. So the first episode is going to come out this Saturday. Normally they're every Tuesdays, but we're going to do one this Saturday at 11:11 a.m. We're going to premiere on YouTube. And then, I'm sorry. It's going to premiere. The podcast is going to premiere, but I think the video on YouTube, I'll stand by for that, because I might do that on Tuesday as well in the morning. But check that out. And yeah, what do we say to the good people, Sharon?
That once you start over Sharon,
then you totally stop being a Karen. And remember, we're not telling you how to live.
Just how to live a little more simply.
That's right. All right, guys. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next week. Take care.
Thanks for having me on. All right.
Bye, guys.
Bye.